I'm Frank Vaughn, your favorite hardcore mode content creator. It is March 11th, 2026, and let's start out today talking about Canada. If you're looking for good news, I just can't give it to you. That's one of the common complaints in the comment section is, what's the good news? Where's the good news? I don't have any. I wish I did have something good to say. I had something good to say about the Don Rowe Doctrine and the idea that the U.S. Empire would scale itself back down and it would focus on the hemisphere and we would all get rich together. That was kind of the faint hope. It seems to be fading in the horizons. As much as my business prospects said hardcore mode in the beginning, I've lost about 400 followers and subscribers, but that doesn't do anything for my bottom line. The thing that really bugs me is the few subscribers I have on a monthly basis that voluntarily contributed to the channel. I've lost, 40% of them because of my position vis-a-vis Iran. I'm not going to change the position. I'm not going to chase dollars. That's why I don't have ads engaged on this channel. That's why I don't take sponsorships. I just want to chase the truth, but I am being penalized for it these days. Anyway, let's just go on with our life. NDP MP Lori Idlout crossing floor to Liberals, bringing Carney closer to majority. I talked about this months ago. It's so trite that you can see these things coming. You can see the soft underbelly of the Conservative Party of Canada and identify by name the MPs that are going to cross the floor. And everybody's like, no, man, it's not going to happen. Lots of influencers online who said it wasn't going to happen. They're making content now about how it's happening, but they never kind of revisit that content in the past where they said there was no chance. Here we are. And it's like the deck has been stacked in favor of those who are not enthusiastic about the Liberal Party, to say the least, because Carney has had a steady exit of long-term MPs going to take post Chrystia Freeland's going over to Ukraine to look after the money laundering racket. I mean, the war effort and to help Zelensky as an advisor. Chrystia Freeland's going to advise him on, I believe it's economic matters. Doesn't really matter what it is. But even with the deck stacked, three conservative MPs have crossed the floor. There's still a soft underbelly that they can tap into. They may. I said that they were going to draw this out. They would come into February, they would come into March, and they would slowly drop the names of the people they've enticed to cross the floor. That process is still ongoing. This may not be the last one. But I'll tell you, with this seashell-wearing MP crossing the floor to the Liberals, and now we have three confirmed by-elections that are set for April 13th, and two of them are incredibly safe Liberal ridings, it looks like he's going to get his majority without triggering a general election. But, I mean, in all honesty, why doesn't he just go for it? I mean, go for it. This country loves the Liberal Party, and you can say that all these polls are fake. I can tell you they're not. The NDP has collapsed like a dying star. Jagmeet Singh killed everything that party had left. It's tragic. And it's tragic, not out of my love for their politics or their policies, but it's tragic because the left lost its opposition to the establishment Liberals. He killed it. And there doesn't seem to be a plan to bring it back. There isn't exactly noble leadership. They're not trying to do anything different. They're just broke. They've sold off their assets. They're in debt because of Jagmeet Singh. And he gets to just skate off with his pension. He gets to skate off into the private sector and find some kind of advocacy work or whatever the hell he's going to do. And he's just destroyed this party. I don't have to like the NDP to see what's been done to them and feel something about it. And it just empowers the Liberals because those people will never vote Conservative. And you can see it. Leisure, which has an A-plus rating, has the Liberals at 49 and the Conservatives at 35. Why don't they just go for it? Just trigger an election. I know the answer. They don't want to stall the progress on all the draconian bills that they're bringing through. We talked about C9 on this channel 2 days ago. It's going to chill free speech in a way that it's never been chilled before in Canada. And sure, there might be Supreme Court challenges, but you can't depend on the Supreme Court to defend Canadian interests. This is on top of the fact that recently there has been all of this recognition of native land claims. You've now got multiple tribes claiming the same spit of land, throwing the entire concept of ownership in this country into turmoil. Even though ownership is just a privilege in this country, it's not a right. You don't have a right to own anything. You don't have property rights. Read your Charter of Rights and Freedoms. You don't even have a fake entitlement to property rights. I've said all this before. The Liberal Party is in a very commanding position. And, you know, what about Saskatchewan? Saskatchewan Premier Mo going to India with PM Carney as part of a trade mission. Look at them getting along. Prime Minister Mark Carney Wright speaks with the Premier of Saskatchewan, Scott Moe, following the First Minister's meeting in Saskatoon, Monday, June 2nd, 2025. They get along fantastically. They've been sharing a plane for a long time. Scotty just recently did an interview where he says we have to, if we're trying to get away from the United States, we have to embrace India. And they have this plan through the Century Initiative to just flood Canada with even more Indian migrants. We have the TFW program, which is robbing everybody of their entry-level jobs. Kids that are trying to get in the labor market can't get in the labor market because we've created a slave class. Liberal voter just seems to be fine with that. They're all tuned out. We're talking about the Liberal base is very old. And it's not that all elderly people, boomers and late-stage Gen Xers, it's not that they're all Liberals. I don't want you to think that. But the lion's share of them are. They're the most indoctrinated people. They get their news from the TV, and they're saddling future generations with the absolute destruction of this country. And they're so full of themselves, these elderly Liberal voters. They're so full of themselves that they're not even smart enough to learn anymore. They don't think they have anything to learn. They're not even learning while they're watching real estate prices decline. And they're watching inflation being set up to rise again as this government spends $100 billion in deficit, which is going to destroy the purchasing power of your pensions. And at the same time, once they get their majority, if you think it's bad now, if you think the legislation that's on the books now is bad, just wait until pension reform comes along. That's what he's here to do. The pensions are a great big bag of treasure. And the Carney government is going to get their hands into them in the name of saving Canada. It's kind of weird how this whole thing flows, man. There's no consistency to it. Because we're supposed to be anti-American. We've built our identity on not being American. We've built our identity on fighting Donald Trump. And yet when Trump does one of the most brain-dead things I think I've ever seen in politics, which is this attack on Iran, Carney backs it. The globalists back it. The neocons back it. The intelligence operations go full ham covering for it with some concocted story that this is all about checkmating the city of London. Anything but talking about what it actually is. We support it. When I say we, I mean our government. Both sides of the house. It's one of the reasons the Conservative Party is so weak is they align with the Liberal Party. This has always been the problem. Pierre Poilievre, the most promising leader of the Conservative Party in generations, has flamed out by aligning himself with the Liberals, by trying to appeal to their base. It is not working. The evidence is right in front of your face right now. And still there's going to be conservatives, perhaps, if they're still listening, that are going to come into the comment section, and they're going to say it's Western Canada's fault. You know, I had a message. I woke up this morning. I started my days early. Thank you to the person who messaged me this morning. I haven't even responded to you, but you know who you are, pal. Woke me up with a message, 40 seconds long. And he says, you know, at this stage, I'm calling my MP, and I'm going to tell him, because we have conservative MPs all across the West, I'm going to tell him the only game in town is separation. You need to can the federalism, and you need to unite around the prospect of a Republic of Western Canada or some kind of exit strategy because the Liberals are ensconced and this whole thing has failed. And I can't say that he's wrong. Now, with the problem is, this individual and I both live in Saskatchewan, and Scott Moe seems to be completely aligned with Mark Carney. They recently had a convention in November where Scott Moe said, Carney's different. He's cut from a different cloth. I'm paraphrasing, I'm not quoting him directly, but he seemed to say that he was in line with Mark Carney, able to work with Mark Carney, that he wasn't a bad guy compared to Trudeau, even though he sits atop the exact same government. Now, it is clear at this point, if you don't respect Carney and what he's done since he's come into Canada, now respect is different from like. I have to respect the man. He's managed to hoodwink the entire country. He's been parachuted in from New York. He's an American in all but citizenship. All of his money, all of his wealth is in American companies. His Brookfield wealth has almost doubled at this point. In his so-called blind trust, which contains nothing but American assets, there's a few that aren't American. I feel like he's hoodwinking the entire country, that there is some kind of coordination with the Trump administration, maybe through Kushner. I mean, there's a lot of links. There's a lot of business links there. There's a lot of back and forth, and that's not even getting into the CPP Brookfield relationship. There's something skeevy going on. You know, there's times where I thought maybe it would be good for us, but I'm starting to doubt that since this war started with Iran, because there's no easy exit. There's no easy off-ramp. And if these guys get the majority that I think they're going to get without going even to the electorate, but even if they did trigger an election, they're going to get their majority anyway. They want this because they don't want to stall the progress on their bad legislation. It's going to get so bad in Canada. And Saskatchewan has a premier that seems to be okay with it. And Alberta has a premier that, yes, she put a bunch of referendum questions together, but it slow walks the independence movement. It means that you're now 2 years, maybe 3 years away from getting an actual referendum on independence. And in those 2 to 3 years, they're going to keep flooding Alberta with immigrants that love Canada, that love the free money, that love the free stuff, that qualify for things that you and I pay for. Like, it's, I don't know where you want me to magically conjure good news. The independence movement is all there is, and there's all of this headwind. And I'm not trying to discourage anybody, because it is the only game in town, but you're being opposed by your governments, which are supposed to be conservative governments. They're supposed to be governments that are bent on the preservation of the values of Western Canada, which forms, in my mind, a distinct society, has one of the best, most beautiful cultures in the country, maybe in the world, and they're actively working to flood it out. Instead of conserving, what are these conservatives conserving at this point? Remember the press conference with Daniel Smith and Mark Carney, and when they signed the memorandum of understanding, which will amount to nothing, and everybody in the room applauded and they smiled and they glad-handed with each other. There was lots of touchy-feely going back and forth. Headwinds, the principal headwind being this war that has been engaged in the Middle East, which there's no quick exit from. Trump says, this is the headline on the screen, Trump says Iran war to end soon. There's practically nothing left to target. However, his own Department of War and the Israelis have said the bombing campaign is going to continue for weeks or indefinitely. Apparently, there's lots of targets left. I don't know who you believe at this point. Actually, I do. You can't believe Trump. He's always been a blowhard, but I've never seen him blow harder than when it comes to this conflict. There is no easy exit, and I don't believe the Iranians are going to let the Americans and let the Israelis out. They're hitting them hard, in spite of all of the rhetoric, in spite of all the bombs. You can send as many B-52s as you want to drop gravity bombs. They're not going to do anything at all, except destroy concrete buildings and residential areas and hospitals, and I think there's been 40 schools bombed at this point or damaged. The stuff that's underground that the Iranians have been building for 20 years, that stuff continues unimpeded. Strait of Hormuz ships hit. That's the headline that you might see on screen right now. Let's just make sure I'm actually recording this. I am. Strait of Hormuz ships hit as they try to run the blockade. They have been kinetically warned that it just won't happen. The straits will not open. The Iranians are committed to this economic war against the United States, and they're going to wage it. And I think what happens next, because the United States has warned today that if you're a civilian and you're near an Iranian port facility, you should get out of there. They may just bomb. They can't take Karg Island. They can't take those port facilities and hold them. It's logistically impossible. There are limits to American power, and there always has been. But they can bomb them and destroy them, and they can cut that oil off. If the Strait of Hormuz is closed, the American response can be, and the Strait is only closed, by the way, to foreign flagged ships that Iran has identified. Their ships keep going. Shipments can keep passing, at least potentially. No one wants to insure anything. So it's not really working according to the plan of the Iranians, not 100% perfect. But if the Americans bomb Karg Island and they bomb those port facilities, then that oil is cut off indefinitely, adding to Kuwait shutting down production because they got nowhere to put the oil, adding to all the shutdowns that are cascading, the Iraqi shutdown, which, by the way, here's another one. This was only a half hour ago. Iraq condemns war on Iran, vows territory won't be used for attacks. It's the first domino to fall. The Iranians are successfully hitting targets all across the Middle East that are American affiliated, and they have a demand. They've actually released a condition to stop those attacks, and that is you have to kick out embassy staff, you have to kick out all diplomats of the United States, and begin the process of getting rid of their military personnel. That's their demand. Now, you can laugh at that. You can say, ha, ha, Iran making demands. We bomb the living heck out of them. They're in no position to make demands. You can think that. You're welcome to think that. You're going to learn in coming weeks just how wrong you are. Time will fix that problem for you. I'm fairly certain on that. Here's another one. The IEA agrees to release record 400 million barrels from emergency stockpiles. Here's why this will have little impact. Great headline, because I've noticed Zero Hedge, they're kind of pro-Trump, you know, so they haven't been quite nailing it right, but I think they're starting to understand too. Everybody's going to understand soon. And here's oil prices right now, up 470. This is after the announcement. The market is now figuring it out. There was that big bump, and then Trump came out and said, oh, the war's over, it's all fine, everything's all good. Literal market manipulation by the president. It worked to tame concerns on Monday. But I've just been sitting here waiting because I can see the situation. I don't care about the ups and downs on any given day. The direction and trajectory of this thing only goes one way. That's up. As long as the strait is closed. And if they're foolish enough to bomb Iranian oil facilities, well, then Iran is going to use their big ballistic missiles, which they have a lot of. They got a lot of ordnance. All this talk about they're running out of missiles, it's actually the United States and Israel that are running out of interceptors. The Iranians can sustain this thing for a long time. And again, time is going to show you that. They will hit back. And when they hit back, this thing cascades. It only spirals out of control. And that's what we're heading into. This is a, you know, I don't say it lightly that it's a big mistake that Trump has made. And I want to talk just kind of open concept here about what it is that I'm trying to say about the Iranians, because everybody thinks like I'm pro-Iran. When I'm trying to communicate what they are, you know, the Shah's son or grandson, whatever he is, I don't really pay attention to it because it doesn't mean anything. You know, he issued a statement in the last, I believe it's the last few hours, maybe it was last night, doesn't really matter when he said it because it doesn't matter anyway. But it built on top of the Israeli government and Netanyahu saying that there will come a moment. And when that moment comes, it's time for the Iranian people to rise up. And the Shah says, don't rise up. Sorry, the Shah's grandson or son, whatever he is. He says, don't rise up until I tell you to, when the moment is ripe. They can signal all they want that they have control on the ground. They can signal all they want that at their command, the Iranian people are going to rise up against the regime. The fact is, when you're bombing the cities, you're bombing the core group of people that you want to rise up. The lion's share of regime support in the past, even the angry bits of it, was rural. These cities, these residential towers that you're bombing, you can watch the videos, not in Western media, not in Israeli press. And you can say it's all fake all you want. It's not. The massive damage that you keep hearing about, when you bomb oil tanks, you turn the air black above these people, and then you rain toxic rain down upon them. It doesn't inspire them to rise up against their government, who you've also targeted, at your commit. Like, the Israeli Americans have not created loyalty. These people, even if they hate their government, and they hate it a lot less today than they did 2 weeks ago, let me tell you, before they martyred Ali, they're not going to rise up for you. Persian nationalism is real, and the strength of Shia Islam, these two things, these two forces that bind Iran together, have both been turned against you. Now, I want to talk about this difference between the Arab nations and Iran, because Iran, again, is Persia. Persia has a martial history that the Arabs do not. They're different. They have prepared for this. And you really need to account for the Shia mind and how comfortable they are with the concept of death. This is why so many Iranians went to fight, many of them voluntarily, during the Iran-Iraq war. There was 500,000 Iranian troops on the front line. There was 1,300,000 lined up across no man's land of Iraqis. And they wouldn't give an inch. And I was actually watching footage last night. I thought about including it, but like, why bother? No one wants to hear this anyway. The few of you, there's a few thousand of you that actually want to hear this stuff. Maybe I should be showing it to you. But I was listening to this young Iranian man who was off to fight the Iran-Iraq war at the end when they were completely outnumbered. And he's speaking to the camera and he's saying that he sweeps his hand over the entire crowd of young men and he said, there's something more important that we're fighting for than all of our lives. And that, to me, encompasses very neatly the difference between the Western mind and the Iranian mind. They're willing to die for their homeland. They're willing to die for Persia. They will not give up that land. It doesn't matter what you do, much like Vietnam, much like Germany. How much the firebombing of Dresden. Like, I remember there's a quote, I can't remember who said it, but it was, if we were to lose this war, we would all be tried as war criminals. I can't remember if it was a British guy who said that or if it was an American guy who said that, but there was a lot of war crimes committed at the end of the war against civilian populations. They bombed the heck out of them, and the German army never stopped fighting. They had totally lost the war, and they kept fighting. Same with the Vietnamese. And you can find examples all through history and down the course of time, and I don't know if any of it matters. I've spent my life... a lot of my life collecting useless, seemingly useless information in my head that it doesn't matter what I know. I can't seem to make a difference with it. And that's my struggle right now. But these people are like that. These Iranians. They're not going to surrender to foreign occupation and foreign dictation of what their government looks like. They will fight. And when they're done fighting, then they'll sort out their internal matters. If the Persians decide they want a new government and they decide to rebel against the IRGC and overthrow them, that will be their business. But it will not be imposed by Israeli-American bombs, especially Israeli-American bombs alone. You need 500,000 to 1 million men to go into Iran. If you really want to conquer it, if you really want to take out the regime, you got to put ground forces in. And there's no capacity. There's no capacity. That's not just me talking. I can see it because I'm not stupid. Because I study these things. But there's military experts on YouTube aplenty. I introduced you to at least one of them who brings on a basket of experts that talk, and I hate that word expert, that talk about this with military credentials. These are people who were involved in several wars. They know what they're talking about. And they see Iran for the quagmire it is, and they also see the fact that, and this is the other side of it. Now that they know that they cannot trust the United States, now they knew already that they couldn't trust Israel. From their perspective, folks, it's really important. This has been a problem throughout the course of history that we fail to understand the other side's perspective. They now know they have no partner they can trust. In their minds, this is a war of existential proportions, that they will be wiped out. And they're not afraid to die to avoid that outcome. They don't see it the way, like, I see Trump, and I see Netanyahu, and I see the commentators, and I see the crazy generals, the few crazy generals that they bring on mainstream media saying some of the craziest things I've ever heard that are completely unfeasible. The voices of the military and the alternative media are far closer to reality, but they never get invited, or rarely get invited, to speak in mainstream media at this point in time. Sorry about the edit and the break. I had to stop and collect myself for a minute so I can wrap this thing up, because people want concise. They don't want long videos talking about things. People have a lot of wants, man. When they view it as an existential war, they don't view it as we need to win the war, which means getting a ceasefire. It means they have to cripple. In order to achieve the victory that they want, they're looking for victory. They've been attacked, folks. They have been attacked. That attack cemented a psychology in their minds. And that psychology means that a win means they set the conditions of the victory. The strait is not going to open unless the Americans can find a way to force it kinetically. I don't think they can. I mean, Iran just released a footage of these underwater tunnels that they have so that they can hit ships. It's insane that the Americans and the Israelis walk around pretending that they can dictate terms when they're fighting an opponent that is committed to kicking the United States out of the Middle East. They're committed to winning the war, and they have enough resources in spite of all of the nonsense, all the PR, all the braggadocious stuff coming out of the U.S. administration. You're going to find out that they have all the resources in the world to continue this war on a sustained level for a very long time. For all the bombs that are being dropped on Iran right now, you realize the eastern part of the country has been left largely unscathed? Do you understand that it has bases too, that it has launchers as well, that it has defense systems as well? Because they've been planning this war for a long time. They have assumed that they were going to be attacked for decades. And they were attacked in the 12-day war. And they learned some lessons in the 12-day war. They learned about the effect that their plans have had. Those who are pretending that this is an easy win for the United States, I think you're slowly starting to wake up. But unless something changes, and I don't think it will, I hope it will. I don't know why it would, though. Something changes and the Iranians let, and this is how it is, they let the Israeli Americans off the hook they've put themselves on. People seem to think that the Israeli-Americans hold all the cards, and they couldn't be further from the truth. The Iranians hold the cards. They're fighting the war on their terms. All of this destruction that you're seeing 24/7 on the mainstream media, they had planned for that. What you're not being shown because of heavy censorship, because of yesterday, I showed you how Planet Labs is delaying the release of Middle Eastern satellite data, claiming it's a security concern, couldn't be further from the truth. You know, I was looking at the American base in Kuwait last night on Google Earth, and I zoom in, and what do I see but this great big pentagram? Like, you don't need up-to-date information to understand where your targets are. Plus, the Iranians are getting their target data anyway from the Russians and from the Chinese. I bet my bottom dollar on it they're getting help, logistical help. And if that's the case, then Planet Lab's story is absolute BS. They don't want to release the images because the images will show the damage and the scale of damage that's being done that the censors are preventing you from seeing in Western media and in Israeli media. They won't be able to hide it forever, but they can hide it for another couple weeks. And in the meantime, I keep reading press release after press release after press release. Another barrage of missiles, another barrage of drones coming in. And I am assured by those press releases in the heavily censored Western press, and that includes Al Jazeera at this point, I am assured that every single one of those projectiles is being intercepted. It's like 100% interception rate. Realistically, when you look at some of the imagery we get, because we do get images, and you see high-rise apartments, or you see high-rise buildings on fire, or you see fuel depots on fire, you can understand that included in interceptions is the work that these buildings are doing intercepting missiles and drones. We're being gaslit. We're being lied to. The markets are going to figure it out. The world is going to figure it out. And it's really sad. You know, there's people who claim that I'm falling victim to Trump derangement syndrome couldn't be further from the truth. All of the promise of no new wars and a focus on the Western Hemisphere and cleaning up the drug problem and getting the illegal immigrants out and tightening up the U.S. electoral system and highlighting how Canada is becoming a security threat to the United States. These were all super positive things that, if I'm completely honest, further my personal objectives. I don't talk about often on the channel what it is I want to see outside of general terms for Canada and how I see those things coming together. I can tell you that U.S. pressure would have been helpful over the long term. But now that focus is divided, munitions are being depleted, resources are being stretched thin, I worry that part of the plan is going to sunder. We are now in March. Elections are coming up in the United States in less than 8 months, midterms. Presidential approval is soft, not in CNN polls, folks, but in Rasmussen, in the accurate polls. The Republicans were already in trouble before the war started. Now they might be in even bigger trouble. If the Democrats capture the House and capture the Senate, they're going to haul all of the administration's officials before a committee. The administration's officials are probably going to throw Trump under the water because they've already been preparing for that by saying that Trump is the leader who is commanding. He is the only guy who can get this done. And Trump is more than happy to stand in front of a podium and say, I'm the only guy who can get this done. When the time comes, if that time comes, it's going to make it real easy to pin the whole thing on him and have him impeached and removed. And that is it. That's the end of MAGA. Over what? A war in Iran that did not need to be waged. This idea that they were an imminent threat is ridiculous. They might have been a long-term strategic threat to Israel, but that has nothing to do with North America. And that was the beauty of the Don Rowe Doctrine, was in saying that during the election, what does a war in Eastern Europe have to do with the United States? What does a war in the Middle East have to do with the United States? We have resources, we got energy, we got oil, we got sunshine for solar. We have rare earth that we can develop, especially if we bring South America into alignment and we're all working together in a hemisphere, and then we can trade with the world and they can sort out their own problems and we can rebuild our infrastructure. We can focus on our finances and creating sound money and paying down the debt and eliminating the deficits and spending the money that you're spending on war, making life prosperous for people who live here again. It's all threatened. It's all out the window. And what's the only hope, and it's a hope that I don't even think you can cling to, is that the United States accepts the loss. They take the L on this war. And I know people are still going to think that sounds crazy today, and you're fine. Again, time's going to go by. I hope I'm wrong. But I don't see the Iranians quitting. They're fighting a different war. I'll finish on that note. They're fighting a different war from the war that Israel and America think they're fighting. The two sides are not fighting the same war. And the Iranians don't want to stop. Because now that they've been attacked and they know that they can't trust the people on the other side, they're going to fight to win.